Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 6 of the Chikandi Podcast. I am your host, Demetrius Burton. As always, the intent is to come together, share knowledge to enhance one another's journey. Thank you again for first-time listeners for tuning in, and as always, to returners, your support is both wanted and appreciated. Thank you for tuning in. We're back, as promised, with part 2 of the Chikandi Mailbag with special guest, soon to be Dr. Sherman Woodard, a.k.a. Babatunde, where we will be discussing entitlement, impact of outside sources, both positive and negative, on student-athletes, support systems and their importance. We're going to also be talking about kids playing high school ball with grades not good enough to get into college. That seems like an interesting topic. And then at the end, we're going to give a little time for soon-to-be Dr. Woodard to give a little shout out to what he is doing. So stay tuned for another exciting episode, part 2 of the Chikandi Mailbag. And Braden and or Jordan, please bring in that dope double impact beat. All right, beautiful people. Thank you again for tuning in, getting settled in. And as promised, I'm going to call you Dr. Woodard. And I'm calling it. I'm speaking it into existence. And I won't take credit for being the first or only. I know you have a plethora of supporters that believe in you and know that you are about to present and defend your dissertation. But I just don't want to keep calling you soon to be nothing. You Dr. Woodard, from my perspective. So just understand when I address you as such, know how. Welcome to the show again, my friend.
Hey, Brother Burton, just thank you for having me back here for another episode. I appreciate the words, the intro to Dr. Woodard. I do, and that definitely come to fruition. But I'm going by Sherman Woodard, as we discussed, and Babatunde, you know, if what I say is offensive at all to anybody for whom I work. But thanks for having me back for another episode, Brother Burton.
So I guess that's a perfect segue into the first topic, a sense of entitlement. Why should anybody you work with feel entitled that you should watch your words in order to not offend? I would challenge your colleagues to understand you're coming from a place of love, and if any words offend, to do some searching within, because you are not an intentionally offensive person. But if some conversations need to be had to clear up some conversation that could be perceived, I would encourage that also. So maybe I'm getting long-winded, but entitlement, a sense of entitlement. And again, I do want to frame, and I'll do so quickly. These are posted to the website as topics to discuss, and there's very little context giving with how to discuss them. So there are some assumptions that I have to make, and one is that the questioner is asking how to deal with the sense of entitlement from student athletes. That's one way to look at it. But another perspective is, and we touched on this last week, the Division I, Division II student athlete being gifted and talented, understanding that classification and certain quote unquote entitlements that should come along with that. We're going to discuss that too. So having said that, I'm going to turn the mic over to the good soon to be doctor, Babatunde, and just to get his just general perspective on sense of entitlement from whatever angle he wants to discuss.
I appreciate any of your listeners that have the courage to write in questions, keeps this topic, what's dear to your heart and to Chikandi, alive and moving. But one thing that you say is, what do you really believe about your Black athletes? And I think that entitlement has to be viewed through that lens, because our other gifted and talented students that are identified definitely have a sense of entitlement. We build in a culture around facilitating their growth. We expose them to things like the best teachers. They go on different field trips. They on different teams. This entitlement is built. It's built in the culture of the system of the school. And we rarely would say, oh, look at the valedictorian walking in here like all entitled or whatnot, because they should be proud. But now the arrogance or whatever, the lack of discipline and things that come with a bad leader, you know what I'm saying, can be indicative of a system that doesn't facilitate good leaders, right? So with the athlete, back to the athlete, the entitlement on him, he needs to be in a culture of teaching how to be special, because he is special. He or she is special. Now, how do we do that? If we haven't built a culture of leadership around him and support around him or her, then his walking around like I'm somebody special can be offensive to a lot of people. So the athlete has to understand that this is a gift. This was something that was given. This is a blessing. This is a gift. And so he has to understand that. And then that creates a humbleness in the human, you know, a thankfulness, and realize that everybody don't have these gifts here or whatnot. And so that definitely had to be built in, baked into the culture of teaching and raising a gifted and talented athlete.
Some good stuff there. And I want to get back to what you said and reminded me, not that I needed to be reminded, but in the context of this discussion, what do you believe, what do you truly believe about your Black student athletes? The investment into a gifted population includes an expectation that there's going to be a return. The valedictorian, because of the investments into studying, along with the supports into that person studying, rewards with a plethora of college choices, right? No surprise, that's just normal, built into the system. But if I see a population as worth less or high risk, meaning if I pour these resources into these, dare I say it, to these dumbass niggas and they ain't shit no way, then I see it as a waste of resources and time. So that's what I'm calling. If you see it as a waste of resources and time, that's just indicative how you see your Black students. They worth less. Otherwise, you understand the importance of supporting all student athletes, but especially those that have been least supported with their gifts. And Dr. Woodard gave a lot of ways in ensuring that that support is there, making sure there's a culture of thanksgiving, of culture of love, Chikandi. And I'm going to stop because Dr. Woodard is here and I'm going to let him keep going.
Man, whew, you came out very, very strong, and I appreciate just listening to you, just resonating on. Due to even the proper supports exist. And what I mean, we have a lot of athletes that have this gift and it's not nourished. I mean, I know this is a coach's podcast, but I like to talk to the athlete and to the coaches to help them see this. I mean, because to play ball or wrestle, tennis, golf, sport at Division I level, you got to be great as an athlete and good as a student and good in character. If any of those, if you're not great, in that triangle, great character can weigh out being good as an athlete, or great grades and great character. Maybe I'm just good as an athlete, but I got great grades and great character, I can go or whatnot. But not to be good in any of those areas, it just cancels you out. I mean, you cancel yourself. So we as coaches have to be fostering all three of those areas. And if we build a culture of that, it doesn't just benefit that elite athlete. It benefits everybody, because now I got good grades and good character, and I can go do whatever the heck I want to do. I mean, job, employment, I can go enroll in the military, I can go to college, I can start my whatever. I mean, don't let me limit anybody with the possibilities.
Self-actualization is one of the keystones of Chikandi, to ensure that every student athlete is having that transformative life experience through your specific program. So what we're talking about, D1, D2 athletes being gifted, when you have systems and cultures in place, again, as Dr. Woodard just talked about, that person who is not D1 or D2 is still getting those same benefits and the same positive impact from just being in that culture. So those skills that they're learning, hard and soft skills, are transferable to every aspect of their life, whether we're talking academics, whether we're talking social, we're talking employment, we're talking financial. We have a better understanding of our self-worth and how to operate in healthy systems. And Chikhandi is able to help coaches and teachers, for that matter, but specifically coaches, to develop those systems to ensure that all kids are getting there. I'm gonna stop there.
I wanted to piggyback on a lot of these athletes are ball motivated. You can really shape behavior with that understanding. You have a significant impact on behavior. So if I'm walking around thinking I'm just too good and just this and whatnot, and treating people like this, if this assumption I'm baked into the question of what is entitlement, you know what I'm saying? I think that can be changed with playing time, with the understanding, because if all three, the character, the grades, and the athleticism isn't there, that is if this athlete says, hey, he wants to go to the next level. I mean, that may not be his goal. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that the gift is there. But for that guy to play on Friday or Saturday, whenever the competition is, these are going to be good and good because this is great.
So having that framework to set the matrix, you just said we have to be at least good in two areas and great in one, at least. And in some cases, you got to be great in two areas if you're not in a specific one. If you ain't a great athlete, you better have great grades and great character. It's just the way it is. Coaches, if you find that student athletes have a misguided sense of entitlement, and that's what I would label it as, I'd encourage you to reach out so we can help. And as I want to wrap up this conversation about entitlement, I think a natural segue, probably in the order I listed and presented them in the introduction, we'll talk about the impact of outside sources, both positive and negative. Not only is it a great suggestion, but we were literally just talking about supporting special groups. And I think talking about those outside supports is timely. So I'm going to turn the floor over to you and let you begin the conversation.
Support or impact from outside networks on young people are huge. The adolescents in a position of figuring out who they are, you know, and we get a reflection of that from the people around us, and they help us understand who we are. And so being around positive sources is critical to success, and that's where these programs have such a powerful impact, because there's families with systems to set up that are wonderful for the kids, and then they go see something similar in the sporting arena, and their families get involved with it, and it just has a magnifying effect. And likewise, if at home and my surroundings aren't that, time isn't there, you know, it's generally what creates the problem, the time to cultivate young people. I mean, families working or doing this or whatnot, but the time isn't there, then my grandma say the idle minds, they'll playpen.
You know? So then you got other institutions cultivating the children, right, as opposed to the family being the primary cultivator.
Right, right, exactly. And that's, again, where the power of the sport is, the power of the team, the power of the culture that you create there, because at adolescent, you hanging around people, and you should be hanging around your teammates. And if your teammates have a culture of checking each other, holding each other accountable and responsible, then that impact of the outside is minimized, and at that age, that impact is the greatest. I mean, peer pressure, we hear all the negative. The positive is equally, if not, the positive has got to be stronger. I mean, the positive is stronger. And when you got, like I said, young athletes checking each other, saying, hey, man, we don't do that. That's not how this is in this program here. Or, hey, come on, let's go over here, expose me to something different. And then you want to hang with them, and you grow with them, and then you're successful, and your kids are successful.
And to an understanding from where one comes from is not to be demonized in this process. And what I mean by that, we do not want a message to our student athletes, and forgive me for speaking as a coach first person, because that's who I am to my core. But coaches, I'm speaking to you in that Chikhandi does not want to state that we're advocating that students come from a place that they need to get out of, AKA you need to get out of the hood. That message is toxic because it implies that that hood is full of bad people, bad situations, and you are better off leaving it. I wholeheartedly disagree with that message. That hood loved and nurtured me. gave me a great, great foundation to become who I am. And me leaving it is a desertion of just that, my foundation. So I don't ever want to send a message to the kids that where they come from is so bad that they are better off leaving it. In the rare case that they may be, then so be it. But generally speaking, we're going to tap into that community that lacks time to support the student athletes and how coaches think they should be supported.
Yeah. You see me kind of on a tangent with bringing that to light, where so many times we're saying, hey, this is something you got to get out. You know, I'm doing this so I can leave. And then you leave, and then the almost talented, those resources are gone.
The hole that's created because you left.
Right.
We left.
Right. And racial identity development said that the fifth commitment stage is wanting to repair, to ameliorate, to heal that community is the ultimate. As far as on a racial identity level of a being of color. And so we have to cultivate that with our young athletes. And I see that with a lot of athletes, though, a lot of professional athletes, where they're tied to their community still. I mean, they support the community and the community that they move to. I mean, so that's encouraging. I don't think that gets noted enough, though.
No, because that goes against the narrative of the self-entitled, spoiled athlete, student athlete. Mm-hmm. And, of course, athlete, in my opinion, is nothing but a cold word for black male. When you think of an athlete, what image comes to mind? And if I'm wrong, okay, so be it. I do want to say, be aware. It's more about awareness of the impact. And then get the data to back up your beliefs, because something you may be thinking is having a positive impact could be mistaken.
I just want to end mine with on this is that we put too much onus on what's going outside of our programs. I mean, because all the research says that my peer at that age has the strongest influence over me. You know, I mean, that's not, we've been at that age. So, you know, your parents can't tell them, they couldn't tell you nothing. You know, and we can't tell our teenagers nothing when they was teenagers like that or whatnot. And all about what our culture of our, whatever we was in, that's who was forming us at that age. And so coaches, it's imperative on them to create a culture of young people challenging, checking, encouraging, and supporting each other.
In a loving way. In a Absolutely. Loving way.
Absolutely.
And after a brief listen to that Double Impact beat, we're going to come back and talk about the last issue in the Chikandi mailbag, and that's kids playing who can't get into college. And then Dr. Woodard and I are going to have a wrap-up conversation with the challenge of shifting the paradigm. A couple of messages we want to reframe, and we want to know what you think about it. Then last but not least, the good doctor's going to have a chance to share some experiences as far as what's going on in his professional life. So yeah, stick around please for segment two, and we look forward to continuing. All right. I'll have you with me.
Ooh.
I bet it's only one other cat on earth doing that right about now. To the rest of y'all, thank you for sticking around. I am Demetrius Burton. You are listening to the Chikandi Podcast. And with us is Dr. Sherman Woodard, where we are continuing to dig into the Chikandi mailbag, where we've pulled up the last topic of discussion for this particular go-round, and that includes kids playing who can't get into college. So first, thank you to the sender that submitted that topic to be discussed. Secondly, I'll mention that, again, it's in limited context, so I will make some assumptions, and if I'm being asked, then so be it. But I'm going to assume that there's a conflict with kids playing high school ball, and their current grades would prevent them from going to college. My first reaction is, so what? In the sense that not every child on any particular athletic team is working to get into college or needs grades that are good enough to get into college. Now, if a student has declared interest in performing at the next level, clearly they need grades to get there. But I don't think a person who wants to play college ball should have higher grade standards for the person not playing college ball, and that determines any playing time or anything like that. Am I making sense, Dr. Wood? Are you able to follow what I'm saying there?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And your refusal to call me Baba Tunde. On this podcast, I feel
It's not a refusal. It's not a refusal. Okay.
On the podcast, I feel like every time you call me Dr. Wood, I got an address. Let the people, you never know when they're going to jump in. Like, oh, look, right here. I call him. He didn't say nothing. Look,
okay. Right, so see? We got those people looking to catch him. All right, Baba Tunde. Understood. Right. Understood.
That's a tricky question without the context. I think you handled it well. I think teams should have goals, GPA set, and standards and support set up to help fill whatever gaps exist is most important. And kids should have an understanding of what it takes to get into university and different type of universities. We're always thinking the big Division I type university, but it's the private schools where if you got good grades and you get a great education and you can play a sport that you love, but it's not a job. I mean, those are opportunities that are missed, I think, in Black communities a lot.
Division III that I'm hearing, Division II along those lines, right. NAIA kind of opportunities that may be overlooked because they don't have the big shiny whatever that comes along with the Big Ten SEC offer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, but then it's lack of like scholarship for the Division III, and so I feel like That's a bubble pop if I thought I was going to be Division I, but if I love this game, I mean, you should. That's where it starts. You got to love this game. And if you love that, you can have an opportunity to go to college and for 4 years play that sport and build those relationships and those connections. And be an awesome experience for a lot of people.
I was able to live that experience vicariously through one of my children. I is educated. My oldest daughter played Division III volleyball, and not to get too personal, in hindsight, I wonder how that would impact my journey if I were, number one, knowledgeable, and number two, humble enough in 1992 to consider a Division III school. I did consider NAIA school, but there were personal reasons for that. But my vision was Big Ten, and Big Ten or bust, and it was bust because I did attend the Big Ten, but I didn't play any athletics. But when I went through the process with my daughter, I realized there was a lot of information I didn't have when I was her age. No regrets. I love the journey I'm on. I have no regrets about anything I've done, with the exception of some people I hurt. I'm sorry. But the point being, that Division III experience that is often missed by many players for a plethora of reasons, yeah, I'm able to kind of see through a different lens.
Yeah, and just the access, a lot of these Division III liberal arts colleges, I mean, the connections, and those are things that we had no idea about when we was going through the process of thinking about college. You know, like you said, we seen it on TV, you know, like, yeah, I want to do that.
Absolutely.
But the connections and the bigger, after that age of doing sport that goes on, is a lot of missed opportunities. And then the fear with the price, but if you're from a low socioeconomic, there's grants and aids, and those universities work with you when you're a good student, because that's why they're going to get you there, and then you can do sport that you love to do while you're there as well.
Absolutely. But to a different student who loves the high school athletic experience and wants to participate in it, but they may not have dreams that include college, they may go right into the workforce. They may have identified a particular trade or vocational skill that requires lower standards, not inferior standards, but lower or different standards. I guess lower is inferior, so we'll throw that out. The idea is not everybody is working to get into college, so don't hold everybody to that standard, and definitely don't beat them over the head with playing time if they don't want to go to college. That's a family's choice. Now, be supportive if you identify, in my opinion, a student athlete who was capable of college and they lowered their standards out of laziness and yada, yada, yada. Push that student to achieve, encourage their family to set their standards high. But in the end, you are supporting that student athlete and family. You're not dictating their future.
I feel like I'm hearing you right. You're saying don't punish kids for not being at their standard, because they might be on a different plight a different journey. I mean, they may have a want. I'm going to the trade school. I'm getting the certification while I'm in high school. Coming out,
I'm going to the military. Right. I don't need a 3.5. Absolutely, that's absolutely what I'm saying.
Yeah, so I don't think that those athletes should be punished. I do believe that should be the GPA's goals and expectations of everyone. And then the system's got to support for, I mean, these kids can learn. I mean, when you got time, structure, goal, teacher, you know, discipline, and where coaches can have discipline in the classroom. So I think that's a fair expectation to whatever requirements is to get into their local university. I think that should be the goal, personally.
Okay. Would you want that standard? Let me ask you this. That being a goal, how would that look for certain kids not meeting that goal?
Yeah, so we'd have group goals as well. And so then that would force the, say if the goal was a 3.0 as the team for GPA-wise. That's kids that way supersede that, but they know that, you know, these kids got 2.5, so they got to do more. So everybody's got to just do a little more. And then again, we got to keep supporting because the kids are going to strive for that. If that's what the goal is and that's what they see we're doing, they just jump on board.
One of the things I'm hearing you push me on, Sherm, is clarifying between me making sure I'm clear on not penalizing kids with the inability to participate in high school sports because they can't get into college. I'm not supporting low expectations.
Right.
Chikandi, we talk about the B-minus guarantee. Every student will have a B average and will have no grades less than the B-minus if you work with us for a minimum 3, maximum 4 years. That's our guarantee for that class that is there for 3 to 4 years. And again, it is with that belief that all student athletes can learn. I just want to be clear on what the expectations are and answering his questions as far as kids can't get into college. Okay, so now what? If you need some clarification, call me. Number's on the website, chikandi.net. Please go to it, along with social media outlets, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Camille's doing some good work, so get on there and check us out. And while you're on there, I would encourage you to drop some ideas for future show topics, whether you want me to talk about them by myself, soon to be Dr. Woodard, a.k.a. Babatunde. Ms. Day has indicated she is happy to come back with follow-up questions, ideas for show guests. Please reach out and share your ideas. Here is where I want to shift the conversation, and the word shift was picked on purpose because here's where I want to propose a paradigm shift. About a message, I'm struggling to find my words here, but I get them. The message of impoverished kids, specifically black kids, and part of their life goal has to be to get out of the hood. That's the messaging I hope to convince you to rethink, in short. And then another one I want us to talk about, and then also, you know, have you rethink, is this idea of people who are in poverty and this narrative of coming from nothing. So I'll briefly start with the notion of getting out of the hood. Coaches, black, white, and anywhere in between, if you are messaging that to your kids, please, 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 please pause. And if I can get you to stop, please stop. Here's what I believe that messaging includes. You have to get away from the people, the community, the environment that loved and nurtured you and got you to this point. Because from here on out, you are better than them and they are now toxic to you. If you're going to be successful, you must leave those people. That's toxic. Toxic. Unintentionally, I'm sure, but toxic nonetheless. Babatunde, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Just sitting pondering how it influenced me and my thoughts, but it's short-sighted as well. You know, I'm from right here from Indianapolis, and what is the hood now was some nice areas back then, and people invested into them, and now they're back in value or whatnot. You know, And so if I was busy getting out of that while others was investing into it, but that gets us in the catch back, because then those of us that have resources, then we don't view putting resources into our communities and growing our communities, and we lose our community. It's part of the suffering that we experience. I mean, we don't really. I had a good friend of mine, Mr. Akers, said when we took the neighbor out of hood, you know, he said that's when it went all downhill after then. I mean, had neighborhoods.
I like that. We took the neighbor out of the hood. I think I was on the cusp of that generation, because I remember having some friends, myself being one of them, where there were some neighbors that had the liberty to basically whoop me if they saw me doing wrong. But there were also some friends, some people I grew up with, that it was known, you better not touch them because you're going to have something to do with their mama and or daddy.
Right.
Like, they mamas, you don't put your hands on my... And one ain't better than the other. They just different. And to be real, I don't want nobody putting their hands on my children. Primarily because I don't. Sure as hell ain't nobody else going to do it.
Today. Back then.
Today.
That's part of the community.
Today. That was the community. Because I knew that person that was putting their hands on me that didn't share my last name, number one, had permission from my granny, and number two, was coming from a place of love. It wasn't nobody just random strangers kicking my ass.
Let Miss Starks or the Hudson see you out there doing something wrong. By the time you get home, they already know.
Yes. Like, man. Yes.
Like, man.
Took the neighbor out the hood. Right on, Mr. Akers. I hear you, and thanks for that jewel. So we proposed to put the neighbor back in the hood. Full transparency, I bought into that narrative. My address is not in a hood similar to a neighborhood similar to what I've grown up in. Do I feel hypocritical? No. Again, that was a message that was messaged to me. I picked up on it. And now as I reflect, I am finding ways to consciously pour back into my communities. And I recognize that I'm from a larger community and not just a specific zip code or area code. Having said that, I do strive to support that group as well. But coming back to full circle coaches, we propose a paradigm shift to get away from messaging that student athletes need to work to get out of the hood, but instead they need to work to find happiness, period. You need to work to find who your God created you to be, and then be that and exist wherever you want to exist, whether it's in the neighborhood you grew up or it's in some beach in sunny San Diego. Because it's your journey. The narrative of coming from nothing. Even heard it in a song I was listening to. Shout out Lecrae, your music is dope. But this idea we came from nothing. Coaches, really ain't got nothing to do with you other than to message to your players. If they walking around saying that message, encourage them to stop.
And along with stop saying that, read and learn our history, you know, for where your ancestors, wherever they made it. I mean, we're up here in the north. I mean, so our ancestors traversed climate change, racism, to get to where jobs were back then. What's the name of the book? She talks about the great migration and the waves that come over. Man, you got to get that. Put a link on here, but I can't pull it off right now.
We'll get it.
But in search of jobs and working and sacrifice, leaving families and things behind and getting these factory and manufacturing jobs and providing families, and that's the stop they're from. Then the jobs leave, you see, and now all of a sudden we from nothing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's opportunity leave, you don't have the resources to move up, do it or whatever. You know, that's a system that leads to this concept that we from nothing, and we communicated ourselves. But that's just a clear, like, for instance, I heard a lady talk about though just the odds of your ancestors surviving the Middle Passage, the strength they had to endure and survive.
So just to be clear, every African American born in America, that's what I'm speaking of, we are descendants of some of the toughest of the toughest of the toughest human beings that ever existed. And shout out to all of our ancestors, not just the one that survived that Middle Passages, but those ones who died voluntarily and involuntarily. But the people who survived, the toughest of the toughest of the, that's where we come from. That's our bloodline. That's our stock.
Yeah.
Communicate that to your players, because they do come from something. We may not, in my particular instance, we didn't come from great financial means, and I covered this before, but my grandmother Shirley Ann Burton had an infinite abundance amount of love, and she willingly gave it in a variety of forms. And I come from a great family. And I'm very aware of the individual greatnesses from my family members. A lot of times they may not be, but that's all right. I see it in them.
Yeah.
And I see who we are and what our potential can be. And I'm also able to see that in student athletes and other teachers. But that ain't the point. The point is, maybe it is the point, stop looking at what you don't have to justify your narrative of coming from nothing, and look at what you do have and see the greatness of what you can either start or continue. But you automatically come from great if you're born Black in America. That's just a given.
Amen, brother.
On that note, I'm going to turn it over to Baba Tunde, or maybe you should be soon to be Dr. Woodard in this sense, because I'm going to ask you to talk about the work you do. Well, not all of it, because you do a tremendous amount of work in the community. One of the aspects of which you serve is through a program you created called Giant Kings. Would you please speak on that?
Oh, thank you, Brother Burton, for the time. Giant Kings is an African-American male leadership, identity, and academic development organization. We started back in 2004, and it's just been a tremendous blessing, a tremendous like ride. It's like amazing, and ironically, if you will, it coincides with when I got done with coaching, when I started, still had that yearning to be with young people and after school things and whatnot. And what this program has revealed to me, let me back up. I went into just thinking, hey, I'm gonna change these guys. I'm gonna give them this information, and boom, 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 boom. We're going to solve the world's problems. But what I got out of it, these 2004, was it 18 years? 18 years?
Of, yeah, exactly.
The journey. It's how if we just create a space for Black males to lead and solve problems in our community, that it's amazing. It's hard to even like explain the scene. It's mystical almost. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like the energy and the magic. All you do is provide a space for these guys, set goals, expectations, leading in the right direction, and how they can change the whole community of a school, where Black males can be the highest graduating subgroup in a school.
Careful, you scare some people when you say that. You assume that everybody else did, and where you got a school just Black people. But go
right,
ahead.
Right. But when they are the standard is high for everyone. And that's not, I mean, you want, wherever you need help, you need to get help and improve that. And so Black males is the highest, and likewise white males is the lowest, and you got to do better in that area. Because, I mean, all kids can learn with the proper supports and encouragement and belief in them. But back to Giant Kings. And these leaders, throughout the years, they come back. They got the OGKs that represent the program, come in and support the next generation of youth. We participate in critical civic engagement, meaning the high school guys work with elementary students twice a month. And this is where the magic takes place. It's them being in a position of leadership over those elementary guys. And this is the things I've learned in the process is that's where the leadership, they want to lead that. You know, so Tremaine was the first one that came to me. He wanted to, he said, hey, you think we can do this next time Little come over? He had plan and things, and I was like, yeah, I was like, and then I felt a kind of way too, because I like leading, but I felt like, dang, this is what's supposed to happen here, you know, and like, The next thing you know,
I'm the leader teaching these cats how to lead. Now they're asking for opportunities to lead, and I gotta recognize that and turn it over, and not just get comfortable in my role of leader and just being the leader for the sake of leading. That's powerful, Baba Tunde. That's powerful.
That's what a leader. If, listen, in group counseling, learned that if there's a leader in the group as the counselor, then a leader is not going to emerge. But if it's the group is not going to have a leader, that's when a leader emerges to that group. And so I knew this theoretically, but I experiencing it was like, whoa, this is what's supposed to happen. You got to back down, you know. Then he wanted to, like, for you know it, hold on to my exercise book thing. And then he was coming up with the lessons. And lo and behold, young cats was watching him as sophomores and wanted to be him when they got there and whatnot. And that's, that momentum just builds and builds, and it's been an incredible ride. My dissertation is really exploring that experience of looking at how racism influenced Black male leadership in schools and how what type of programs and supports lead to these leaders. But I'm going to jump to the side note. So I got a full-time job, you know, and this is, and I was a full-time dad when I was going through this and things. This is like a after-school, two nights a week program, number one in my heart. You know what I'm saying? But we got a checkoff list. I mean, it's way down there, right? And so this is with minimum time investment, maximum want to get this done, though. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, you see this transformation happen with young men in schools. And so we as a community, we have to demand for programs like Giant Kings, programs for leadership development, support from these schools, our funds, our tax dollars, our pans went out. That is our purpose of schools. When we were freed ourselves, emancipated, manumitted, how are we going to look at it? We immediately began founding schools with purpose. Purpose to develop leaders that will guide us to freedom and equality. And so that's deep. You just get freed, quote, air quotes going right here, freed, and you start schools so you can develop leaders that will lead you to freedom. So you see, you understood that you wasn't free. And that's what we have to start commanding, demanding from our schools. And I'm telling you, minimum support. You imagine you get one paid staff in that building with a caseload of anywhere from 30 to 100 young male leaders. And the magic that would happen.
Cultivating that on purpose.
Right.
Again, you talked about the work you were able to do was maximum will with minimum time, right? Consider the other things you had going on. So one has to conclude that with maximum will and maximum resources, the potential is limitless as far as what we can see unfold.
I tell you another interesting thing. I mean, it's been a number of men and women that have been supporters, co-founders, even that draw to the Black professional as well, is what I'm speaking of, that have limited spaces to go and kind of express things, the concerns that's going on in our communities and things, and flesh them out in real time with young people is empowering. So much love to all the people that have supported our program. And I do want to say that we are swinging now into Giant Kingdom. So this is our first year. And so young people come back all the time as far as leading sessions, talking with, I mean, some of the young people are not young that anymore. They're always young to me. I mean, you know.
Keep the babies. Always babies. Right.
But we had advocation for letting females join. Actually, a brother just showed up to the meeting, one of the young teachers, with females. And I was like, I took that kind of sign. Well, almost like I'll tell you when the leadership thing took. I'm like, whoa, hey, I just going to show up to a meeting.
These three like this?
Like, you know, I was like, hey. You know, but shame on me, you know, because that's been magic. I mean, seeing the interactions and the growth, and just to me, females are just way smarter than us. I mean, they could be way more focused and organized. I'm on average two years ahead of us.
Right?
I raised two daughters and a wife. I'm like, man, I learned when they started talking. I was like, oh, dang, they are smarter than us.
You had to go through no doctoral program to learn that.
Right.
So how can one, you just shouted out those who've shown support, how can new supporters engage?
Right, okay, so we're at Giant Kings on Twitter. But the name of it's the Giant Kings now, but the original tag is at Giant King on Twitter. I'm SJ Woodard at ATT.net. You can connect with me there through email. The other social media, I'm on LinkedIn, Sherman Woodard. But we'd love to help, but my command is to our community, though, if anybody's listening, is that we have to go in and say, hey, enough is enough. The whole history of school talked about the us founding of, us pushing for universal school. There was a black movement that pushed for that. And then we know about the Brown versus Board with DSEG. And now we know now, or many of our schools are back segregated, but
apartheid. Mainly,
right. And as soon as we no longer had teachers that look like us and leadership that look like us in our schools, we didn't have the intent of developing black leaders. And now what happens is black leaders do develop in this system that we have, but they're so assimilated into that system. And this isn't no like, not, I used to be like mad at school, but I was like, hey, this, you know, it's not gonna knock somebody else, that this is their way of dealing with an oppressed society. You know what I'm saying? They capitalize off of and things and whatnot. Sometimes it's suddenly they open their mouth and then they represent the black voice. They're like, but that's often what happens.
That's just a reflection of your process, your journey. You know what I mean? So feel how you feel, process it how you want to.
Nah.
We ain't here to judge. We're just here to create a heightened awareness of where we are within an intention of knowing where we want to go and how we plan to get there. That's the whole deal. And being able to reflect on where you've been, knowing where you are with an intention of where you want to go, that's healthy.
Right.
That's healthy.
Right.
You ain't got to be perfect. You got to be me, dog. Just relax. You ain't got to be perfect.
You talking about me personally?
Yes, sir.
I ain't very accurate at all. Games require accuracy, you know. So I just go hard at them, you know.
Straightforward. Hard in the paint. Anything else about the Giant Kingdom that you want to let the good folks listening know before we wrap up the episode?
No, I just appreciate the time and appreciate other, it's other programs out here, other people that dedicate time, resources, and energy into a belief in that our kids can be leaders. And anybody that can support that's what we need. That's what we need. We're asking the football programs and coaches and things to do it. We're asking all hands on deck. I mean, because these young leaders will solve our problems. I mean, new problems are mass. Don't get me wrong. It's in like, you know,
creating a utopian society. Right, here. Right. we evolving.
Right. Involving them in the problem-solving process is critical. And that's what leadership is.
So as these new problems arise, they're, again, critically solve them, which then minimizes, hopefully, their future problems. Baba Tunde, Sherman J. Woodard, soon to be Dr. Woodard. It's been an honor and a pleasure. And I'm confident we're going to do this again. But until the next time, thank you, my brother, and appreciate you.
Much love, my brother.
Demetrius Burton wrapping it up for the Chikandi Podcast. Thank y'all for sticking around for this extended part two of the Chikandi Mailbag. It has been fun. Until the next time, be well.